Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show right here on your home for Sporting Kansas City Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Nate Bucati, joined as always by the one and only El Jefe, Carter Augustine. Good evening, El Jefe. How are you?
Good evening. Great Wednesday edition here. Feeling good. Some big games this weekend.
We have a lot to get to, and we only have an hour to get it done, so we will try to jump right into it because there's a lot on our plate. We could do hours, I feel, worth of soccer talk right now with you. But we'll do the best we can to pack it all in because, like I said, there's a lot for us to discuss. We will talk about all of those things with the four aforementioned people, the following people. First, we'll hear from Peter Vermees. I had a chance to catch up with him at training today in advance of Sporting Kansas City's, we keep saying it, but massive game against the Minnesota United Loons on Saturday night, 7 o'clock in Minnesota. That obviously every game that Sporting plays from here till the end of the regular season will figure to have massive playoff implications.
Just four left.
Yep, just four left. So they all matter quite a bit. So we will talk with Peter Vermees about that. We will hear from Benny Failhaber, an interview that I taped with Benny today from Orlando, where he is with the United States men's national team. I will play that entire interview tomorrow morning on the Border Patrol here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. But I'm going to give you about an 8-minute clip.
A little tease.
Yeah, where we talk a lot of stuff we're going to play on this show is Benny talking about the current climate with the U.S. men's national team. What's at stake with this game tomorrow night, and then, you know, what it's going to take for the United States to get a win against Panama. And as you know, Benny's always very thoughtful. He's analytical when he looks at these things, so you'll definitely want to listen to that if you are at all, like Carter and I probably are, nervously anticipating the game on Friday night between the United States and Panama. And we will talk with Paul Tenorio of 442 USA. He is one of the better soccer writers in the United States, MLS and national team reporter for 442 USA. He also is a sideline reporter for the Chicago Fire. He dropped what could be a bombshell in the MLS playoff race when he broke a story on Monday. I remember where it was because I was sitting in the press box at Arrowhead Stadium getting ready for Monday Night Football, because of the illegal use of a substitution, basically not putting a player on their roster or a player that shouldn't have been on their roster into a game, FC Dallas could forfeit what would be a 3-0 loss. It was a 0-0 result, so they got a point down in Orlando. Now they might have lost that game. We'll get into all the details of what that means for the playoffs and what's going to happen because we haven't heard an official announcement from the league yet on that. But I believe Paul is also in Orlando, so we can get some thoughts on the U.S. men's national team from him as well. And Orlando just happens to be the epicenter of every weird, crazy thing that's happening in the world of soccer right now, from possible forfeited games to U.S. women's national team players getting escorted out of Epcot Center.
Rite of passage, I think.
And along with some other players from the Orlando City side of things. And now, of course, the U.S. men's national team getting ready to play Panama in one of the most pivotal World Cup qualifiers in American history. I'll go ahead and throw it down right there. And so I guess we can start there briefly, Carter, before we hear from Peter Vermees, because you talk about a week coming up for those of us who care about Kansas City and USA soccer. USA Panama, if the United States want to control their own destiny, they need to win that game. It's a crucial game in that regard. Sporting Kansas City, Minnesota United the very next night on Saturday. USA versus Trinidad and Tobago. If they take care of business against Panama, then they can win that game and punch their ticket to the World Cup. So that's a big one. Wednesday night, Sporting Kansas City against the Houston Dynamo. And then the following Sunday, Sporting Kansas City against the Houston Dynamo again. So we've got ourselves a little 10-day stretch where there's a lot of big-time soccer on just for the teams we care about, let alone the qualifying that's taking place all over the world, and some really interesting qualifying campaigns going there, and interesting playoff matches that will impact what happens with Sporting Kansas City all over the place as well.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just talking about it there kind of overwhelmed me. Just adding all up all the games that are going on, because you mentioned it, those two are just for Sporting in USA, but there are some crazy World Cup scenarios, especially down in South America.
Yeah, CONMEBOL is a mess right now.
It's crazy. In Europe, the qualifying is getting down to the nitty-gritty as well. So it's just a really exciting time and really exciting for the U.S. and for Sporting this 10-day stretch as well, and really looking forward to all those games.
You will hear me ask the question of Benny Failhaber. And I was asked this question. There's going to be a piece coming out in the Sporting News by Mike DeCourcy, and he called me in, and he was trying to get perspective from a lot of different people, broadcasters, coaches at the youth level, college level, people that are involved in the sport of soccer in the United States in different capacities. He wanted their perspective. This is a question we don't really want to consider. One of our coworkers asked me this after the game the other night. What happens to soccer in the United States should the United States not qualify for this World Cup?
Interesting as well that you bring that up, because our guest Paul Tenorio just an hour ago released a story with that very question. It's a question that we don't want to answer. It's obviously bad if they miss the World Cup. I think it'll just be a hitch personally, a big hitch, but a hitch is the train keeps moving forward. Certainly from when I was young to now, it's moved so far forward. MLS has played a huge role in that, but you hope it doesn't happen, because it would be a big hitch, not only for the fandom in the country, but for players that miss out on the biggest tournament that they can play in, which would help young players grow. And it would be a huge missed opportunity in terms of developing players as well. So, yeah, it's that game against Panama is so big.
I think I'm with you. Somebody asked me, well, would MLS go away? No. I feel confident that we're past the days of wondering about the future of the league. I feel like those days were 10 years ago when there was and 10 years isn't that long, but in the world of MLS, it was forever ago.
Yeah.
There's 70,000 people showing up to some of the games. There are 20,000 people in Kansas City showing up for U.S. Open Cup games. This league, it would take a hit, a big-time hit, but it would not. I mean, this league is on firm enough footing. I think those of us that are always kind of paranoid about the future of soccer in the United States can relax a little bit in that regard. But I'm with you that the momentum that has built from the last three World Cups, I'd say it started a little bit in Germany. And then this city was a microcosm of it. Then in South Africa, it was little watch parties at different bars around town. People were having a really good time. And all of a sudden, Landon Donovan scored that goal. And the next thing you know, in the knockout round, there's 12,000 people in the Power and Light District. And then 4 years after that, that had grown so much. And the legend of that watch party, that one watch party against Ghana, had grown for 4 years to the point where even the group play games had 12,000 people. And the watch parties we had there were epic, and those were starting to happen in a lot of other places in the country, to the point where now the cities that didn't have those watch parties are ready to have watch parties like that.
Yeah.
In this coming summer, that's all lost if you don't make it. Now, like you said, I think it's a hitch. In some ways, it might light a fire under some rear ends and all of that. But it's not the kind of fires you want lit under your rear ends. You know, you want to take this and continue to grow. So it's massive. It's a massive game. It's a game I expect the United States to win. It's a game they should win. If they don't win, to be quite frank, they maybe don't deserve to go to the World Cup. This isn't CONMEBOL. And CONCACAF is getting a lot better. MLS deserves a ton of credit for that, I believe. But you beat Panama on your home soil.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, right?
Yeah. And I think Matt Beasler said that in an interview with ESPN this week. And it's something that the players will know. After all this long hex qualifying cycle, after losing at home to Mexico, getting thumped in Costa Rica, this long process, they're at the end with two games to go, and they know that if they beat Panama at home, they're pretty much in the World Cup. And you can talk all you want about the performances throughout this cycle, but that's that is a scenario in which they should be confident that, that they should qualify because, like you just said, they should beat Panama at home to go to the World Cup. If they deserve to the, go to the World Cup, that is a result that they will get. They do have a nice out, a draw against Panama means that they're still very much in the running, but they should win that game.
And let's certainly hope so. Friday night, 6 o'clock, they're billing it at. I don't think the game's going to kick till about 6:25 on ESPN2. All right, before we take a break to hear from Paul Tenorio, I did want to play for you the interview that I did with Peter Vermees today. Now, this is going to be more Sporting Kansas City specific, looking back on what was a really frustrating loss to the Vancouver Whitecaps, which really made it a long shot for them to finish first in the West. Now, it's still possible, but it's much more of a long shot now. But although second place is still very much on the table for Sporting Kansas City, and who knows, they crank out 3 results in their last 4 games. Maybe they can still finish in first as well. But we'll also talk more specifically about the Minnesota United game coming up. That's where I started the conversation with Peter Vermees.
All right, Peter, here we go with basically the home stretch, 3 games out of 4 on the road, starting with this one in Minnesota. Now, this is a Minnesota team you've seen a bunch already this year. Maybe what are just your thoughts on what they provide as a challenge and maybe also playing on the surface, which is more of a football surface than an artificial surface made for soccer?
Well, I think the first thing you'd say is between, you know, the first time we played them and now, they're a much different team. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple things about it. One is they're better organized. 2 is they compete like you would expect a team in MLS to compete. I think when you're putting an expansion team together, and I've never done that, but I'm just saying from afar, although, you know, when I took over, it was like an expansion team because we completely changed all the players out. And when you're doing that, what you're doing is you're trying to set a bunch of pieces of your foundation. And so it takes some time. But you can tell, even with the game last night, the way that they came back, you know, they're at certain times they're trying to find themselves in the game, but they're competing the whole time. And I think that's a big piece, and that is especially important at this point in the season to have that competitiveness because the intensity of all these games takes a few notches up, and you got to be ready for it. And so I expect, you know, it to be a really difficult game there. On top of that, the turf there is a little different. It's really slow. It's not like they have a system to water it all that well. So it winds up being one of those games where you have to be able to move the ball quickly, but at the same time put yourself in a position to not get slowed down by the way the field plays.
Another one of the factors in this game, we all know about the international break now, and you're going to be missing 3 of your biggest name players, Benny, Matt, Graham, all gone. You've had to deal with that in some way or another through the course of this season. But in particular for this game, how do you cope with losing 3 big names like that?
Well, you know, it's hard to replace, you know, 3 guys like that. It just is. So, you know, I'm not going to say that, you know, okay, we got 3 guys that are just going to fill in and be exactly like those guys because that's not the case. And it never is because all players are different. They bring different things to the game. So the good thing is that certain times in a year, certain guys have gotten opportunities. And I'm hoping that, you know, when they step in, they keep the standard up and help us achieve, you know, what our ultimate goal is to go there and get points. So it's not an easy one, but, it you know, it's what we have and we got to deal with it.
Final question for me, for you, Peter, on this one is, and I know you tell me all the time about how every game you approach with the same intensity level. Coming off of a game like this Vancouver game, where I'm sure your team felt like they outplayed the opponent, deserved a win, but didn't get it, does that add any level of just, I don't know what the right word is, but motivation or anything like that just to get back out there and maybe feel like, you know, you were unlucky in the last game?
You hope it does, all right? I mean, as a coach, it for sure does for me and the staff, no doubt. The question is that it happened last Saturday, and then this game is now on Saturday, and a week's time goes by, and do you lose the emotion from that game? It's my job to try to remind them of that when we get, you know, to game time, because look, we did everything in that game except for score, and I don't know if we would have played a whole another game, another 90 minutes, if we would have scored that night. It just seemed like it wasn't going to fall for us. But I also can't look at the game in a way and say, ah, it was a terrible performance, because it really wasn't. We played well. We created incredible chances. I mean, we had a penalty kick, you know. I mean, nine times out of ten, I think you score those, right? So all those things were in your favor, but you didn't do it. And so I would like to think it has something in your stomach that isn't sitting well, and you wanna clear that up. And you clear it up by going out, playing well, and getting points. And that's what our objective is for Saturday.
Okay, so we talked with Peter there about the three national team players that will be missing for Sporting Kansas City. Well, it's no better for Minnesota. If anything, it might even be worse. Johan Venegas, the midfielder, and center back Michael Boxall left for their national teams with Costa Rica and New Zealand ahead of their game against Atlanta last night. Three more of them depart now, or did, after the game against Atlanta. Center back Francisco Calvo to Costa Rica.
Captain, right?
Yeah, and we've seen he's a big-time player.
Great
for them.
Yep.
Midfielder Kevin Molino, who was one of the biggest acquisitions in the offseason. He's been in good form.
Especially in that Atlanta game, he was on fire.
Yep. And he's going to Trinidad and Tobago, playing against the United States on Tuesday. And the center back, Jermaine Taylor. So, for Sporting Kansas City, it's an issue every bit as much, if not more, for Minnesota United. It's a test of depth. And so far for Sporting Kansas City this year, the depth has been in their favor more often than not. We'll take a break. When we come back, Paul Tenorio on a bombshell that he dropped on Monday, plus maybe a scene setter from Orlando as well, when we return on the Sporting Kansas City Show. The Sporting Kansas City Show continues here on your home for Sporting KC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. We've got a lot to get to, and a man who's involved in almost all of that is Paul Tenorio. He's a fantastic follow on Twitter. Follow him at Paul Tenorio. That's PaulTenorio. Paul Tenorio. And, of course, you can read his stuff at 442-USA. Good evening, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm feeling a little bit of pressure. You got Benny Fielhaber on the show and Peter Vermeith. I got to step it up, you know?
Neither one of those guys dropped a bombshell that could, like, rattle the MLS playoff structure the way that you did on Monday, so you're already one up on both of those guys.
Well, you know, at least I got a bit of a head start. I'm going to need it.
Now, here's the question I have for you, though. We understand you're in Orlando. Have you done the Around the World Challenge at Epcot Center by any chance?
Listen, I don't know enough Orlando SWAT team members to risk it, so I'm going to stay away from there.
Now, with one-liners like that, you have moved right ahead of Benny Fielhaber, at least.
Well,
maybe not Vermeese, but Fielhaber for sure. So give us the scene quickly before we get into the playoff stuff in MLS and the story that you broke on Monday. Can you set the scene for us a little bit in terms of the anticipation for this United States men's national team match against Panama, which is one of the biggest qualifiers maybe ever for the U.S.?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a real understanding of just what's at stake for this U.S. national team. I mean, there's a possibility of this team missing out on a World Cup for the first time since 1986. And in a qualifying cycle where not a lot has gone right, I don't think anyone around this team, as far as fans or observers, media, whatever, I don't think you can be overly confident that the U.S. is going to get it done against two teams that, frankly, they should beat, right? They should beat Panama at home, and they should beat Trinidad on the road. But, I mean, again, Panama in the last four games has earned a tie against the U.S., so it's not like it's an easy opponent. I think the fact that the pressure is there certainly factors in. And, you know, it's been interesting being around the team the last couple of days. The players all understand, you know, that the World Cup is on the line, and the attitude has been, listen, we believe that we are in control of our own destiny and that we can get the results. But I think everyone's a little bit wary going into Friday's game.
You mentioned that opponent, Panama, Paul, and as you said, they've given the U.S. fits in the recent past. I have a question for you, being that you did work down in Orlando, I believe. The game against Costa Rica, the last game in New York.
Yeah,
Costa Rica. There's a large Costa Rican contingent. Is there any worry that there'll be a large Panamanian contingent, being that the game is in Florida this time around?
You know, I don't know. I don't think so. Look, the U.S. made a big mistake. My father, just for full disclosure here, my father is Costa Rican, so I have a little bit of insight here. The largest population of Costa Ricans in the U.S. by a wide margin is in the New York, New Jersey metro area. So to pick that venue as the place where you want to play Costa Rica just wasn't smart. What's interesting about Orlando is it's not really an area that is very strong in any certain demographic. It doesn't have a huge Mexican population. Doesn't, I don't think, have a huge Panamanian population. A lot of Haitians in Central Florida, certainly. But other than that, it is a huge tourist destination for Brazilians and for the British. That's the one X factor. If people like to travel to Orlando, and I know they've been offering travel packages in Panama that go along with Disney and all of that, but I don't expect it to be an overwhelming crowd at all when it comes to Panamanian fans. And in fact, I'm writing about the fact that I think Orlando has a chance to prove itself to be a go-to home for the U.S. national team. It's not an easy place to play for visiting MLS teams, and it has the potential to be a really tough place to play if you're a CONCACAF team as well.
Yeah, I think that's what makes this a little intriguing because, you know, we were down there with Sporting Kansas City earlier this year, and I think they were getting bigger crowds then because, the season hasn't gone so well for Orlando City since then. But we were all very impressed with being downtown. Every bar on that, whatever that main street was, had an Orlando City flag or bar sign out front. There were people wearing gear all over the place. Of course, the stadium sold out for the game that we were at. So you get the sense that it's a good soccer community. But like you said, there's also, I always feel that it's a very international type of city. So I guess the question is, those people who are turning out like crazy for Orlando City games, are those predominantly USA fans? You know, does the city feel that same pressure and sense of urgency that you just mentioned that the team feels? Do you get a sense of that whatsoever?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I was talking to the head of the American Outlaws here in Orlando, and they were saying, look, there is a large majority of the ruckus and the ILF, the fans here in Orlando, the most vocal fans that do support other countries. So I don't think that you'll see necessarily as the same people in the stands. But this is a city that has embraced the sport, unlike any other MLS market I've been in yet. Of course, I haven't been to Kansas City yet. It's the last big one to check off the list. But you cannot go anywhere on an Orlando City game day in this city without knowing it's an Orlando City game day. And I mean that. Any right. restaurant, anywhere you go in, it's pretty remarkable. My expectation going into this game is that, yeah, they're going to turn out for this team. It's going to be loud, and it's going to be a tough place to play. I would be surprised if it ends up anything but that. But this is the first chance for Orlando to show it can be a supportive city for the U.S. national team. They've never hosted a U.S. national team game before, and so it's kind of an unknown. But I do think they picked this venue and this city because they believe it has the potential to be a permanent home for the U.S. national team.
So we talked about the atmosphere around the game, which, of course, is very, very tense. And what about the actual product on the field? Anything about the U.S. roster surprise you? And you mentioned the recent draws. How do you think this particular team matches up with Panama?
Yeah, I think for me, the big surprise of this roster is Fabian Johnson being left off. You know, Bruce Arena has said he felt like Fabian Johnson wasn't fit enough. He only played two games in September, only 181 minutes in the Bundesliga so far. I still think it's a huge decision to not even bring him in for a look. That, for me, is the big question mark. That being said, I'm not sure what to expect from this team. Benny Feilhaber being a part of it, I think, I had written that I thought Bruce Arena should call in a true number 10 because it'll give them another option and perhaps ease some of the pressure on Christian Pulisic out on the wing, give him some space to work. And when a team sits with eight behind the ball, you need somebody that can unlock that kind of defensive block. My expectation as a result of that is that they come out in a 4-2-3-1 or in some system where a number 10 can feature. And I kind of expect Benny Feilhaber to be a part of the starting lineup. I think he was brought in for a reason. And if not, I would not be surprised to see at some point for the U.S. to experiment, potentially play with a 3-5-2 where they can be a little bit more on the front foot and try to really dictate the game either against Panama or Trinidad.
So this is still a guess. I think anything we throw out there is a guess, Paul, but I'll call it an educated guess. I'm with you, first of all, to before I even say this, I'm with you. I just made the comment to Carter before the show started. I haven't seen a better number 10 play the number 10 role for the United States. I haven't seen one that's better than Benny Feilhaber. since Benny Failhaber started getting left off the team, unless you count Christian Pulisic. But obviously, there's a sense that he is better suited on the wing where he plays with his club team. And if there was just a number 10 that could unlock things and take some of the pressure off him centrally, that he would function better. So I'm with you. I'd love to see it. The sense I get from talking to some people is Benny's there, and he's like the fire extinguisher in case of emergency on Friday night, and they need a goal. He's the guy that can come into the game late and unlock things. We'll see. We'll see if I'd love to see him in that starting lineup, and we'll see how it plays out. But a spinoff question to that is, you mentioned maybe they could experiment with the 3-man back line. Isn't part of why, and I was not a big Jurgen fan, isn't part of why we were all frustrated with Jurgen was there was no consistency, and it seemed like it was experimentation from week to week and game to game. Should we still be experimenting with things with two crucial World Cup qualifiers on the line?
Well, I think the difference is I think it's less experimentation at this point. This is a system they've run before in this qualifying cycle. They played a 3-5-2 for 90 minutes in Mexico at the Azteca. You could argue in that game they used it more as a 5-3-2, right? They were in a bit more of a defensive posture. And they switched to a 3-5-2 on the road in Honduras, and that's what helped lead to the game-time goal from Bobby Wood. So it's not as though this is a system they haven't run before. I think it's something that Bruce Arena has trained extensively with this national team. With an idea that it is something that gives them more versatility where they can play some of the pieces they want to play in midfield and also have two strikers up top. And that's the reasoning behind it. The frustration from my angle being around the team during the Jurgen Klinsmann era was, for example, when they played a 3-man line against Mexico in Columbus at the very start of the Hex when they lost. That was a system that they had not trained more than one day in the lead up to that game.
Right.
And players were a little bit confused about the messaging and the reasoning behind the change and what the expectation was in their specific roles. If you're going to play different formations, there needs to be a clear purpose and there needs to be a clear message. And, the players actually spoke about that today at availability, Michael Bradley, DeAndre Yedlin. There are different ways to play that system. And if they do use it, whether that's for 25 minutes or for 90 minutes, the most important thing is that it's clearly set up and that it's clearly trained. And if that's the case, they should be ready to move into it if needed.
Okay, let's transition to the big bombshell story that you broke earlier this week. And once again, we're visiting with Paul Tenorio. You should follow him on Twitter, at Paul Tenorio. He writes for 442 USA as well. You tweeted out on Monday, major MLS news. I'll kind of cliff notes it here, but basically, per FIFA rules, you say once a team lineup sheet is given to a referee, if a player is changed out of that lineup, he is ineligible for that game. FC Dallas swapped Teshua Akindele into the starting 11 for Michael Barrios, and then Barrios subbed into the game in this 0-0 draw against Orlando City, which should result, according to FIFA rules, in a forfeit. First of all, I have to give it to you that when I read that, my jaw was on the floor. So kudos to you for coming up with this story. Have you heard anything from the league and what the actual official fallout is going to be at this point of this from this rules violation?
Well, listen, we'll start by saying I think the bigger problem that Dallas faces is there's a competition rule that is handed out, a competition booklet, to every MLS team. We don't have access to it as media, but the teams all have it. And inside of that rule book, in that competition rules of Major League Soccer, it is explicitly spelled out and stated that once a player is removed from the starting lineup after the team sheets have been given to the referee, they cannot play in the game. They are not eligible for the game. In fact, they're not even supposed to sit on the bench after that happens. So it is very clear. It is very specific. And so it's going to be difficult, in my opinion, for Major League Soccer to find the right punishment to fit this crime. I don't think the league wants to dock points. I think that the precedent within FIFA of using an ineligible player in a game most often leads to forfeits. There are exceptions. Sunderland a couple years ago used a player who was technically ineligible because the last piece of paperwork hadn't arrived from the international transfer. He had been approved by the Premier League, but that last piece of paperwork was missing. So in that case, the Premier League only fined Sunderland. They did not change any of the results either in Premier League play or the FA Cup. Is that the same? Is it different because it was a clerical error versus an error or a decision made on the field that day to sub him out of the lineup and then to play him? Do they factor in the fact that, the referees should have flagged it and not allowed Barrios into the game? There's a lot going on here. In my reporting since I've put the story out, I don't feel confident in what the league is going to do. There are a lot of questions from many, many people I speak to around the league who are very interested to see how the league reacts. And there are a lot of teams watching. There are teams watching who are impacted in the playoff race outside of Dallas and Orlando, San Jose and Real Salt Lake. There are players watching, coaches watching, GMs watching, because this sets a precedent moving forward. And that's why there's such an important part of this punishment. If you don't go with the forfeit, that punishment has to be strong enough to dissuade teams from saying, hey, we'll take the hit of a $10,000 fine if we're in an important semifinal in the playoffs and we want to make a tactical change based on what we see after lineups are handed in. MLS has to prevent that kind of stuff from going on.
Yeah, you mentioned there's got to be a bunch of teams with their eyes on it. And is there any recourse for a team that would lose on this, which maybe New York Red Bulls comes to mind, as Orlando would cut the gap to 2 points, or are their hands just tied here?
No, I think their hands are tied. I'm interested to see, you know, I don't think those teams have a right even to protest the result. I know that Orlando certainly does. But I do think that I would be interested to whether or not those other teams weighed in with the league and their opinion of what should happen, you know, what San Jose said, what Real Salt Lake said. And certainly after the decision goes down, I think it'll be interesting. I'm personally going to try to make some phone calls to get a pulse of the opinion around the league of what happens when the punishment's handed down, because I think that I think there will be some strong opinions from around the league when it happens.
And for our listeners, if they don't know, you know, how significant this could be, so FC Dallas, if they were to forfeit the game, would lose 1 point because they had a draw originally in this game. They're right now 1 point below the red line. So that would put them from 1 point below to 2 points below with only three games remaining on their schedule. And for Orlando City, that would give them two more points than what they have right now, which would put them within 2 points. I guess it's not called the red line anymore, within the playoff line, as the league wants it to be called now. But that would put them within 2 points of the playoff line with two games to go for them. So these are massive implications, possibly, if the league decided to determine a forfeit on this. Now, part of the question for me then, too, Paul, is has the league said anything about when they plan to make this ruling? Because for me, you still want to win your games, but I would think if I'm teams, I'd like to know where I stand and what my situation is in the standings when I play these final two or three games. And you know, if they wait to make the decision till after more games are played, that seems like that kind of throws a little bit of a competitive integrity, you know, to the wolves as well. So has the league, do you have any sense at least when they plan to make this decision?
I don't, and I agree with you. I think the decision has to come down at some point before Dallas plays on the weekend. I think both teams need an understanding of where they stand, but there has been no indication to me, at least, of when a decision is going to occur. Me, just kind of my opinion, knowing the league, I wouldn't be shocked to see the decision come down Friday, just around kickoff time of the U.S. national team game. You know, what we call it, the Friday night news dump. That's what I'm anticipating, but that's just me guessing as someone who's been doing this for a little while. But no, there has been no indication, and I think everyone is people are growing impatient. People want to know what's going to happen, and I think the league just wants to make sure they get this right.
Hey, maybe they can let us know how much target allocation money is going to be distributed to the teams next year while they're at it. Any chance that happens on Friday as well as part of the news?
No, you're preaching to the choir for if Peter's tuned in and listening, because I think every GM in the league has a little bit of their plans for the offseason on hold until they know exactly how much money is coming in. And many of the voices, the people I've spoken to around the league, GMs, technical directors, they are frustrated that they don't know yet, and they are having to draw up multiple off-season plans because they don't quite understand what's going to happen, not just with the amount of money, but there are some potential other changes to target the target allocation money program that would impact the moves they can make as well. So everyone's in a bit of a holding pattern right now.
Well, that's the state sometimes in MLS. Paul, look, fantastic work. We really appreciate the time. And I'm with you. You're a seasoned veteran, because there's no better way to bury that story than to put it out on Friday when everybody's focused on the men's national team. Friday afternoons when you dump the bad news anyways because everybody's off for the weekend. So that's probably a good guess as to when it'll happen. Maybe final thing, can you give us a prediction? Are you in the business of it? Will you give us what you think is going to happen between the U.S. and Panama on Friday night?
Well, I always hesitate at predictions because I always end up looking stupid afterwards. Look, my goal is always to just have a story ready to go on deadline, whatever happens. Now that I work for a website, I can't use that excuse. I think it'll be a U.S. win. I just have a feeling that this is going to go down to that final game. And so my prediction is a U.S. win, and I think it'll be a relatively tight match. So I'm going to say 2-0. With a really, really late goal, with Panama throwing everything forward, that eases the pressure for the U.S. So for 2-0 USA on Friday night, there you go.
Sounds great. Hey, Paul, thanks a lot for the time. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on.
That's Paul Tenorio. Fantastic work. If you didn't already follow him on Twitter, I think you have the reasons why you need to follow him.
Yeah, what a scoop.
Right now. Big-time story, and it's one that's still developing. When we come back, we'll hear from Benny Failhaber from Orlando City right after this. All right, thanks again to Paul Tenorio for joining us on the show. Some great information from Orlando and on a developing story in MLS that could affect the playoffs. Now let's hear from Benny Failhaber. Again, this is an interview you'll be able to hear in its entirety tomorrow morning on the Border Patrol with myself and Stephen St. John. But I had a chance to talk with Benny Failhaber today. And the part that we're going to play for you here is all basically about the U.S. men's national team, the big game coming up on Friday. Of course, Benny has not been with the team for a qualifier in years. Remember, he was with the January camp, played some friendlies for the United States, but then did not make any of the qualifiers since then. Of course, we know he was frozen out during the entire Jurgen Klinsmann era. So I asked him about what it's like to be back with the team and what the culture of the team is right now with such a massive game just a couple of days away.
Well, first off, everybody's had a really good attitude coming into the camp, and I think that, you know, there shouldn't be any extra concern. Obviously, the room for error is close to none, but I think that we know that we're the better team and that we should get things done, and so if we play our game, we don't need to do anything extra than what we are. And so I think in that sense, it's been very good. I think all the guys are aware of that. We know how big of a moment this is for our team to make sure that we punch our ticket to the World Cup, and so it's been a pretty cool experience to be here. But at the same time, I think the one thing that I've said and I continue to feel while I'm here is that it's pretty quick that you feel like you're back with the group. A lot of guys that I've been in the national team with before. During the Bob Bradley days and obviously a lot of guys that I know from MLS. So it doesn't take much time to be in with the group to kind of feel like, you know, maybe you've been here for more than just one camp. And so it's been an easy transition and I think that the guys are ready for it. And I think we'll all be, good to go come Friday.
So one of the things I've read a lot of quotes from guys down there with you at camp in Orlando, that there's a confidence level because the United States, look, you've been in this position before. World Cup qualifying is not like it's a cakewalk every time. And it seems like the U.S., when they've had their backs against the walls, they've come out and they've answered the bell. What do you chalk that up to? Why do you think the U.S. has been good at that, and why does that give you guys confidence in this one?
Well, I think that ever since I've been with the team, I feel like the team has a mentality that's probably similar to just how the American mentality is in general. You know, that one that when we are up against the wall, that's when we're at our best. And I think that we know the kind of situation that we're in right now. We haven't, you know, put ourselves in an easy spot, all things considering, but we've managed to also get out of maybe a worse spot that we were in 6-7 months ago and put ourselves in a position that we still hold all the cards. You know, we can win these two games and we ensure the qualification of the World Cup. And so I think that's when we're at our best. And obviously we have an opportunity here to prove that once again. But I think that's just the American mentality to really, when backs are up against the wall, we have our best performances, our best showings, and I think that's what's going to happen again on Friday and on Tuesday.
We're visiting with Benny Failhaber. He's with the United States men's national team as they take on Panama in their second-to-last World Cup qualifying match. And this could be the one that determines who finishes in third place, which would be an automatic bid to the World Cup. The game is on Friday night. You can watch it on ESPN2. And Benny, I want to ask you a question that I've been asked a couple of times. I had a fan come up and ask me this after the Sporting game this weekend, and I had Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News is writing a story on this and called me and asked my opinion on it. I'm more interested in yours, to be honest, and that is, what does it mean to U.S. soccer, not just the men's national team, but just the sport in the United States, from the MLS level to the youth level to the fan level, all of that? What does it mean? How important is it to make sure that you qualify for the World Cup in your mind?
I think it's very important. One, because we're good enough to be in the World Cup, and at no point should the U.S. not qualify out of our region. You know, you obviously have Mexico. Costa Rica has become a better team, but, I mean, we should, you know, be one of the top two and at worst top three, you know, in our conference, in our in CONCACAF. And so it's vitally important. And I think with how our league has been growing, MLS has been growing, and, you know, I think fan appreciation has been just every time getting bigger and bigger. I think obviously it's a continuous thing, and it needs to, I think our national team needs to qualify for the World Cup for that just to continue to evolve. And so that would be a big step back, I think, in not only obviously with the national team, but just U.S. soccer in terms of the growth of it. And obviously I think those are all big factors as to why, you know, it's very important to qualify.
All right, let's talk about this match a little bit. Panama is a team, and maybe this is a bit of a tangent, but I think we've talked a lot about how MLS has helped the United States develop more players, which hopefully, you know, develops more players for the U.S. men's national team pool. But, boy, when I look around at these CONCACAF games, Benny, I see a lot of guys that are playing professionally in MLS. And I wonder, do you think that the presence of MLS has lifted the teams like Panama and maybe Honduras? Has it benefited them as well in terms of giving them another local avenue for professional players? Because, like I said, we're going to see some guys that we've seen in this league playing against you on Friday.
Yeah, there's no doubt that I think especially the quote-unquote lower teams, you know, that weren't one of the superpowers of CONCACAF have definitely improved because of MLS. And you see so many guys, like you said yourself, that are playing within MLS or have played in MLS for a few years here and there that are on their national teams. And I think there's no doubt that it's improved the quality of play within CONCACAF. And I think as much as that might be, you know, make it more difficult for, you know, for the U.S. and for other countries to qualify for the World Cup through CONCACAF, I think in general it just builds the quality of play in our region, in our league, and eventually on our national team as well. And so it's hopefully something that just helps every single team in our region just continue to get better. And so I think it's, as much as it might be a little bit of a, I wouldn't say a negative thing in terms of the competition's harder now to qualify, in the long haul, I think it's a much more positive thing.
Yeah, rising tide lifts all boats, that's for sure. What about this match? Tell us maybe as fans, what should we be watching for? What are some of the keys for the United States if you guys are going to get this big result and get a win on Friday night?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to go after it from the first whistle. I think we're going to try and press them. We're going to try and turn them over. we're going to try and get balls in behind and you know, get shots on, get set pieces and put balls in the box and really try and swarm them and make them feel, you know, our presence in the game. I think typically in those kind of games, the more you can get around the ball, the more you force your opponent into mistakes, and a lot of goals come off of those mistakes. It's when we expect Panama to, you know, put a lot of guys behind the ball, try and make it an ugly game, maybe go for a 0-0 draw or try and sneak a goal. So for us, it might be tough to, you know, really break down 10 guys behind the ball. And so at that point, you got to really put that pressure on them, force them to make mistakes. And I think that's a lot of what we'll see. And hopefully we can get an early goal to make things a little bit more fluid. And so we can play our game after that. But it should be, you know, a good match. I think obviously both teams have everything to play for. We know that we're really competing against them and they're competing against us for that third spot. And this result has a huge bearing on where everybody finishes.
So there's a taste of the Benny Fehlhaber interview you can listen to in its entirety tomorrow morning on the Border Patrol with myself and Stephen St. John and Jake Gutierrez right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Carter, we've touched on the game a little bit. We've touched on the expectations of it. Anything you hear that stands out there from Benny Fehlhaber? And I think it is interesting when he says that in some ways, ironically, the growth of MLS has helped American soccer, but it's also kind of made it more difficult for U.S. soccer maybe to qualify because it's made some of these other countries a little bit better.
Yeah, they're going to play Panama, who has a wealth of MLS experience. We've seen Costa Rica. A bunch of their guys are in the league mm-hmm. as well. I agree. I think the growth of MLS has raised the standard of soccer over here, and now there's two high-quality leagues, including Liga MX, where people from the Caribbean and from Central America can get some good games and really develop as players. I agree with that. It has made it more difficult. What stood out to me was, and I've seen this echoed in a couple other interviews as well, I think Tim Howard said it in a recent published with Grant Wall, they want to press the game early.
Yeah.
Force turnovers. Balls in behind was a phrase there that he used that I'm looking forward to because I think that means Bobby Woods on the start, maybe Josie, and obviously Pulisic, and there'll be some speed up top.
It is going to be very interesting. Of course, 6:35 kickoff on Friday night. And then, of course, don't forget Sporting Kansas City versus Minnesota United at 7 o'clock on Saturday. We'll see you next week. Thanks to Nathan for running the show today. And thanks to Paul Tenorio, Peter Vermees, and a little clip we heard there from Benny Fehlhaber. We'll see you next week right here on the Sporting Kansas City Show.